Welcome to the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis.
And Matt Enders.
This is episode 6, November 20th, 2011. We're looking at a little bit of our stats, and we have total downloads of 666, and this is our 6th episode.
So we're hoping that the 4 sixes saves us, so it's not just 3 sixes.
We have 48 unique repeats, so I count that as how many regular listeners we have.
Woohoo! Thank you, 48.
Yeah. News is pretty slow this week.
Yeah, the kernel release news was kind of slow this week. The current development kernel is 3.2 RC2. It was released on November 15th. Being an RC2 release of a large merge window is reasonably sized. Even though this has been the largest Linux Next in the history of Linux Next, RC2 has the exact same number of commits since RC1 as there were during the 3.1 release. I'm not exactly sure what that means. I wrote it at about 2 o'clock in the morning.
What? So what, like an RC or Linux Next? Is that like the next
release? Yeah, the next kernel, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Since they've been doing Linux Next instead of, remember how they used to do like 2.2 was production, 2.3 was development, then 2.4 was production, 2.5 was development.
Yeah.
But when they got to the 2.6 kernel, they stopped doing that.
Right.
And okay. they go this Linux Next model kind of thing where it's all in the same release stage. You just have the development version and the there were numerous fixes with some K-test improvements in the RC2.
Sweet.
Then the stable updates, we had stable updates to 3.0.9 and 3.1.1. They were released on November 11th, and both contain a large quantity of important fixes.
Important fixes.
And that's all I have for the kernel news.
Well, you know, important fixes are better than critical fixes. That way there's not...
I don't think that really means anything. I think that's just what they decided to say at the time.
Yeah. All right. So for the distro news, our distro releases this week. A little slimmer than we had in the past. But we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 releases. Starting with the oldest of OpenSUSE 12.1 on the 16th. They are considered one of the oldest and most prominent Linux distributions on the market right now. I do know a few people that are using it.
But my son runs OpenSUSE, but just because on one of the games he plays, some guy gave him $50 of in-game money if he would install OpenSUSE.
Oh, yeah.
So he switched from Ubuntu to OpenSUSE for the $50 of in-game money.
Hey, that's worth it.
It was worth a damn.
Right. If somebody's going to give me $50, I'd try it out.
There you go.
And then we have Incognito Live System 0.9. It's a Linux-based live distribution with the goal of providing complete internet anonymity for the user. I really did look into this. I downloaded it. It looks pretty cool. The desktop isn't bad.
And what's it using for a desktop?
It's GNOME desktop. But anything you do in it goes
GNOME
through
GNOME 3?
No, GNOME 2.
2.3.2.
Or 2.2, yeah.
2.3.2. That's all the further GNOME 2 is ever going to go.
Yeah. All right, so it's it looks pretty good because everything you do, it goes through the Tor network, so it's all pops out in random places across the world. And I tested it out. I SSH'd into a server I know, and it said I was coming from like Brazil, and then the next time I SSH'd in, it was coming from Germany. So it works. It's a cool system. I'm gonna have to look into that for other endeavors that I use.
We don't want to know about those, Tony.
And then IPCOP also has a release that was on the 18th, 2.02. Their releases are fairly slow. I think it's been, or at least from 2.0 to now, it's been like 4 years.
That's not slow. That's glacial. That's worse. That's worse than Debian. Come on.
Yeah, I was using them for a while, and then it went 2 years without any updates. And I'm like, yeah, I bet there's some security holes in here. I'm going to try using something else. That's when I looked up IP Fire, and that looked interesting.
I don't know. I'm really liking that pfSense.
pfSense, yeah. That's cool. BSD has a very solid core kernel to it. And for firewalls, that's actually really important. Puppy Linux also has a release this week of 5.2.2, Wordy and Racy. I don't understand what the difference, or if that's two different
desktops. Wary and Racy?
Which is kind of
weird, because like last week or the week before, didn't they have that Slacko release based on Slackware? And that was 5.3.
And now we're back down to 5.2?
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's Puppy. Who hell cares anyway?
And then TinyCore also has another release. I think I put that on a
TinyCore. I actually tried using that one time.
Yeah.
TinyCore is not kidding. There's like nothing. You got BusyBox, and that's just about it.
Wow. Oh, it's tiny. Yeah. And then for distros of the week, the hit counts, we have Mint at number one.
Woo! Mint! That minty goodness.
They've been at number one for a few weeks now in a row. That's nice.
Well, it's Ubuntu's all the way down to number five and continuing its downward slide.
That's depressing me. I'm not a Ubuntu fanboy, but I like it.
No, not at all.
But we're not here for popularity, are we?
No, we are not.
Number two is OpenSUSE, probably because of their release. Fedora's number three, and then their Commodore OS Vision. That really surprised me that it got in the top five.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised too, because it's a totally new out of the blue release, and I think it's the name Commodore.
Yeah, it's got to be. Yeah, it's such a large, like a vintage name
from
a long time ago, and now people are like, oh, they're back. I want to go check it out. It's got to be all it is. And that's what I have for distro stuff. Let's go on to the tech news. Matt, you want to start off?
Sure will. Wine is a new release. It's 1.3.33, version 1.3.33 of Wine for running Windows applications on Linux, BSD, Solaris, and Mac OS X has been released. This version has improvements to bidirectional text layout for writing in Arabic, also some fixes for WinHTTP proxy, a new version of Wine Gecko 1.4 based on the Mozilla Gecko layout engine, along with many bug fixes. New in this release is text output is now supported in the DIB engine. They have improved HTTP proxy support and several cursor fixes. So that's for all you people who can't let go of that proprietary Windows software. Wine is out there doing good, releasing new stuff.
Yeah. You know, I looked into a levelator program to try to get our sound better. And the only way that I've heard other people get it working is through Wine. And when I tried through Wine, I could only get the oldest version to work. And then I ran it on Windows, and it worked fine. But then I thought, you know, I'll just mess around with Audacity a little bit more, and I found some settings that do just as good. So I'm sticking with just Linux.
Audacity, there we go. Stick with those open source tools.
Yeah, it's nice.
Now we have an actual Android tablet beats Microsoft Vaporware tablet. Microsoft has been kicking around the concept of a touchscreen for a long time, with never having developed a product that is usable by the average user or targeted at the mass market. They're currently working with Samsung, the leading Android phone maker who wrongfully pays Microsoft a royalty fee for using Android, to release a 40-inch Surface tablet running Windows 7 and the Surface 2.0 software. Ironically, within a week of Microsoft's announcement of the Vaporware tablet, an actual Android tablet beat Microsoft's Surface by creating a bigger 65-inch tablet running Android. Arctic Technology, they're a Turkish company, their press release has this to say. We developed what we believe is the world's largest Android touch tablet. Whether you call it a tablet, a smart board, or a touch panel, it's the biggest thing running the Android operating system that we know of. The beautiful 65-inch LCD touchscreen can be used to do everything that an Android tablet can do. Download apps, play games, watch HD movies, browse the web, edit documents, run photo slideshows, and more. How it works is the screen is an optical touchscreen that supports two-point gestures. The unit itself does not have a processor, memory, or hard disk, just USB and HDMI ports, along with a power source. It is powered by a 10-inch Android tablet that utilizes an NVIDIA Tegra 2 chip with 1 gig of RAM. The touchscreen has a dock with USB for the touch input and HDMI for audio and video. What is clearly evident is that Microsoft's vaporware can't even keep up with Android's reality. You can see a video of the Arctic tablet in action at Wacky YouTube URL. See our show notes for the real URL.
Yeah, it's there. But, you know, like you said, Microsoft has been working on that for a long time. I remember 5-6 years ago, they were toting that desk. It was the actual desktop that you could use.
That's what that Surface is. Like,
yeah, Surface
computing. It's a projection thing, and then you interact with the projected.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be you just plop your phone, your camera on there, and it downloads all the pictures.
And it's got, if they could get it to work right for the average user, it would be kind of cool, because the Android, for certain things, it works better, at least in theory, than Android does. It does many more touch points than the Android one and things, but I don't know.
Yeah.
If you don't have an actual product that people can put their hands on, you don't have an actual product that people can put their hands on, do you?
Exactly. So this 65-inch, that looks awesome.
Go check that video out, too. It's pretty nifty.
Yeah, the video is actually right in the show notes, so you can watch it straight from there, or you can click on it to go off to the YouTube website, whatever you feel like doing. But that looks awesome. You can use that as your TV.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
That is cool. I wonder, most of the tablets now have an HDMI out, right?
Right. That's why it has an HDMI in on the, because that's how it gets its video and its sound is with the HDMI in.
Yeah, okay. So, but I mean, you could really take your own little tablet and HDMI it out to a 65-inch TV, right? But then
that TV is not going to have touchscreen abilities. So this, the actual screen itself would have touchscreen abilities. It would be really useful for conference rooms and classrooms.
Yeah,
is where it would really come into play. Sure,
that would be awesome.
So that way, the teacher or the presenter can actually interact with the giant screen.
Mm-hmm. There are some of the schools are using smart screens.
Yeah, those Prometheans. Prometheans have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
It's like a smart whiteboard where...
I'm not sure if it's called... is it Promethean the company or
the
product?
Yeah, Promethean's a brand name.
Oh, okay. Because I've seen Smart Board is the product name.
Yes, yeah.
And
I've never actually seen another one other than a Promethean, so...
it's probably it.
Yeah, and I'm in a couple of different schools, so...
Yeah, I like those. That's really cool. We have one in one of our conference rooms at work, and I hook it up and mess with it every once in a while. It's cool. Click here.
We won't say where Tony works, that he's slacking off in conference rooms playing with the Prometheans, but...
I'm testing.
Oh, okay.
I got to make sure it works.
Got to make sure it works. There you go. Next, we have a Berlin court upholds the GPL. DSL router manufacturer lost its case against Cybits, a producer of web filtering software. The GPL, General Public License, was central to AVM Computer Systems' case against Cybits. AVM Computer Systems tried to get a legal sanction against Cybits to prevent them from making changes to the code they use in their routers, a piece of code covered by the GPL in the Fritzbox product. AVM filed 2 suits against Cybits in the last year, stating when people install Cybits filtering software on AVM routers, it alters the firmware of the routers, thereby infringing on AVM's copyright. Harold Waite, founder of the GPLviolations.org, said, "I am extremely pleased that the court turned down any request by AVM to control any modification to the GNU GPL license components of the Fritzbox firmware, enabling and encouraging everyone to innovate based on existing software and products is a key aspect of the free software movement." The court, however, did uphold an ancillary claim by AVM and enjoined Cybits from distributing the software when it causes the web interface to display an incorrect status of the internet connection and web filtering software. Matthias Kirschner, FSFE's, which is the Free Software Foundation Europe, German coordinator, stated, "But this is a side issue. The important part is free software gives everybody the right to use, study, share, and improve it, Nobody should be allowed to prevent others from executing those rights. Yeah, I just don't get it. They used entirely GPL'd software in their product, right?
Yeah.
And then when Scibids modified it so they could plug their web filtering software into their router firmware, they said, wait a minute, you can't change that. That's our stuff. But it's not their stuff. No. It's all GPL. So I don't know why they thought they had a case from the get-go. But
apparently the lawyers didn't pay attention to what license they were using or read the details of the license.
Well, they did, because they were claiming that that under the GPL they would be allowed to say that you can't.
What?
I think they just were... I mean, it was in Germany. That's awful close to Holland. Maybe they were smoking some dope. I don't know. I just don't know.
Right. No, it's good to have it upheld. It needs to happen more often.
Yes. And now there's some more on Linux Mint 12. Since the RC came out, there have been many bugs fixed. apt-ural is now fully functional. Adding PPA repositories was fixed. Mate received a critical update to Mate Session Manager. This bug prevented Mate to be started from the login screen for i386 users. Mint Menu was ported to Mate. Packages now open with GDebi. MGSE Menu received keyboard navigation and multiple bug fixes. MGSE Window List was given a brand new look and now looks extremely similar to the Genome 2 window list. MGSE Bottom Panel now makes it possible to switch between workspaces using the keyboard shortcuts Control-Alt-Arrow keys. The ability to open directories as root was added to Genome 3. The feedback from the RC release wasn't as straightforward as it usually is. As anticipated, Genome 3 is dividing the Mint community. MGSE was well received, and it aids in the migration to Genome 3. MGSE had numerous notable improvements. The Genome 3 experience in the final release of Linux Mint 12 will be vastly improved over the RC release. With Mate and MGSE, Mint 12 is moving in the right direction. It is just not workable to continue using Genome 2.32, as Mint would then no longer be compatible with the upstream Ubuntu and Debian repositories. As Mate and MGSE mature, they will offer users a very viable alternative to full-blown Genome 3.
Yeah, it's... That maturity thing is a big thing. That's why I've noticed there's a lot of updates to it, but it's because it's a work in progress.
Oh, yeah. It's a total work in progress. They weren't even sure they were going to be able to... That's what delayed the RC candidate for the Mint 12.
Oh,
yeah? Was they wanted to make sure that they were going to be able to get it working before they told anybody about it. So
that's good. Yeah, and then the whole Mate, being able to start it from the login screen... That's kind of an important thing, because you're supposed to be able to log in to run
things.
A little
bit. I guess the 64-bit people could do it, but the 386 people they couldn't get it to work. So, but they got it. They got it fixed.
All right. Well, wait. It prevents Mate from starting.
For i386 users.
Oh, the bug prevented Mate from starting it.
Yeah.
I thought the bug was you could start it without logging in.
Oh, no.
Right. Yeah, that's an important thing, too.
Yeah, right? You got to get that fixed.
Yes. Yeah, Amazon, you know, their Kindle Fire, some researchers have looked into how much it costs for them to build it and then how much you're selling it for. They pay $201.70 U.S. dollars to build the $199 tablet, that Kindle Fire, and that's just the hardware.
Yeah,
that doesn't include
the marketing and the shipping and all that.
Yeah.
But, because I was just reading an article, too. It didn't go into that kind of detail where it shows you the exact dollars, but it stated that all of these, like, the e-reader people, like the Barnes & Noble Nook crowd and the Amazon Kindle crowd, they're all selling the readers at or just below their production costs on it because they want to sell their content.
Yeah.
And that's where the real dollars live, because let's think about it. It's an ebook.
Yeah.
Sure, I'm getting a little bit of a discount, but like I just bought one recently and I paid $30 for an ebook.
For an ebook, right. Okay. The distribution of that is what? How much to run a server?
Exactly. So.
Yeah. And then Amazon has their own, their whole EC or AWS network that they're running it on. I'm sure they're running it on that.
Sure.
And they're giving that away for free, too. You know, for anybody that's looking for an EC2 instance.
Right, well, it's like the pusher, man. Yeah. Here, the first taste is free.
Exactly. Some interesting hardware stuff that I saw an article on was the Color Hug. It's an open source display calibration device. Richard Hughes has been working for the past 3 years on this open source color meter called the Color Hug. This is hardware that measures the color shown on the screen and creates a color profile. Existing hardware is proprietary and 100% closed. And my hardware has the GPL bootloader, a GPL software, GPL firmware image, and GPL hardware schematics and PCBs. This is really cool because I have seen some of those. Do you know what it is, that device for a color meter?
No.
What it does is it measures what your screen is putting out and then calibrates it and so that your screen will then show true colors. Because, you know, every single display shows that same red a little bit different from one display to the next. And these color profiles is what fixes that so it looks the same. So if you're doing photo editing, video editing, it's very important to have true colors come out. Otherwise, what you're looking on one screen and somebody else downloads it and runs it, it's going to look different. And then, so you want something that's going to look the same across
all the...
Yeah, so as long as the original is set perfect, then anybody else, you know, it's going to be... There's still going to be a little bit of variance, but it's not going to be your problem.
And I just read that whole post to myself. It makes perfect sense to me.
It does? Maybe I haven't had enough coffee this morning. The last line, look at... More interportability and...
I don't see that
a lot
line.
Cheaper. Not the last line, second to the last. It's the...
It's faster than the proprietary hardware, and more importantly, a lot cheaper.
Oh, importantly. Yeah, I can't read that. Jeez.
Does it make sense now, Tony?
It does.
Okay.
Oh, well, that's the news I found this week. Like I said, it's kind of slim on news. And I did see one other article. It's on... when you're hiring for a junior Linux administrator,
I read that. I read like three or four of the questions on the test. I'm like, this is bullshit. And I just gave it up.
Oh yeah, was it because you didn't know them? Or?
Well, some of them were stupid, and some of them were just like, why would you ever need to do that? Especially one of the questions. I don't know Perl. I know some Bash shell scripting. So sure. Question one is, what's the first line of a Perl script? I have no effing idea.
Right.
What's the first line of a Bash shell script? Well, that would be, you know, #
hash bang.
Yeah, hash bang, you know, so.
Bin slash, yeah.
Yeah. I do %/bin/bash. That's what my first line is, so.
Yep, well, that's what makes it a Bash script.
So.
That's Bash.
But, so, you know, and then there were just some other just really, like, okay. Here's one for you. How do you update the locate database? that was in there. Come on.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking.
Okay, here's Tony. How do you update the locate database?
I don't use locate.
I use locate all the time. It's so much faster than find.
See, there's some tools that I, on command line, I really want to figure out and you want to start using, and that's one of them.
It's so much easier than find. You know, there's no, you don't have to put directories or anything in. You just say locate and what you want to locate, and it searches the entire, because the database, it builds a database of the entire file system when you do it.
Oh.
Yeah, you do update DB.
Yeah.
And that builds your locate database.
Hmm.
And then you find stuff in less than seconds.
That's awesome.
Because find, if you do a find from root, like if you have no idea what you're looking for, where what you're looking for is, and have to do your find all the way from root, man, I've had some finds take some time.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Yeah.
Locate's way faster.
Awesome. And then.
And we'll just pretend Tony didn't know that it was update DB to update the locate database.
Hey, I like Linux. I try to use it, but most of my stuff isn't scripting, isn't I mean, I know command line, I'm familiar with it, but I'm not a administrator, you know. Although I want to start doing that, you know. So that's why I thought that was interesting, that interview test.
Well, study those questions, Antonio.
All right. All right. Well, any projects going for this week?
I'm just still banging on PF Sense, but it's really looking cool.
You're banging on it.
I'm banging on it, and I'm banging on it hard.
Oh man!
And it's really starting to look pretty good. I actually didn't have a whole lot of time this week because my daughter's in the drama club at her high school, and their production, their play was Friday and Saturday. Saturday was two shows, a matinee, and then a 7 o'clock show. And being that my wife is the president of the booster organization, I had to help feed these kids all week long because they were there until 8 o'clock at night rehearsing. So I've had a pretty nuts week. So
yeah, I can see how it's busy, but it's really important for the parental involvement. I think it's awesome you guys are doing that.
So.
Yeah, you know, my wife was a band director, and that was a big thing. There's like three or four parents that do a lot of stuff, and then you know, and then another 80 parents that don't do anything. And, you know, if you're a parent, you help out. You got to go out and help out.
Yeah. Well, that's good about the organization, because she's also in the marching band at her school. And both the marching band and the drama, the parents for both of those are just great. They help out a lot.
That's awesome. So,
but somebody has to help run it, and that's where it takes up a lot of the time.
So. Oh, yeah.
And my wife has chosen to help run it, which means so have I.
But you got the skills, right?
Oh, yeah, right. My skills are, I do what she tells me to. That's how come I've been married for 25 years.
So, The Secrets to Life by Matt Enders.
Yeah, Secrets to a Long Marriage. Do what your wife says.
Cool. Yeah, same with me. I'm busy, but no computer-related projects at this moment. You know, just a little bit of the XBMC, a little bit more. Found some plugins, but haven't installed them or played with them. I did hear about it the other day that there's a like a netboot PXE type setup for that, so that you can still run diskless workstations.
So that you could run like a diskless. Say that 12 times real fast. So you could run like several diskless workstations around the house for different TVs and have them all booting from the main like BMC box. Is that what that's for?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't even have to be a BMC box. All it is the TFTP server, and then you share off your music files or your video files from there. And that's what I have running right now. I have a Ubuntu server running Samba and sharing off all my media.
Why are you using Samba? Because that's what BMC wants to use, is Samba?
Yeah. It has a couple different ways, but I use Samba for multiple platform interoperabilities.
And again, say that 12 times.
Right. So what I really want to do, and if anybody has experience with this, I want to get Firefox or Chrome running on there. Because I want to be able to surf the web from my TV. I want to bring up.
Is that just because you want to be able to surf the web from your TV so that you can just keep your butt on the couch and do everything from the couch?
That's right.
Okay.
So let me know. You know, our 49 regular users, you got to let me know.
All right.
Cool.
So that's all I have today, Tony.
All right. Yeah, the show's a bit shorter than the last couple weeks. Right now, I think we're about 30 minutes.
Sorry about that, guys, but I'm really tired. I finished putting my notes together at 3 o'clock this morning, and then I had to get up at 5 to come in here and record this with Tony.
Yeah, I can vouch for that.
And then I forgot my keys to the building. So I had to come and tell Tony, you have to wait for me to go back home and get my keys to the building.
I knew something was going on when he shows up and has no keys and has to go home. Anyway, so we've got some music for our end here, our outro music. It's another Creative Commons artist, and it's Brad Sucks is the artist. It was interesting enough for me to check it out.
I would change my name, buddy.
Well, you know, it was interesting enough for me to check it out, and then I listened to the music, and it's really cool. Now, I've got a give a little disclaimer. I haven't listened to all the lyrics, but in general, I think it was a really cool beat, and I like it. So it's going to be playing next. But you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis.
And Matt Enders.
Have a good week.
See you next week.
Time. It's making me nervous.